Blog Talk Radio.
Well, aloha, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Wrestling Night in America. I'm Kelly Wells. I am your host tonight as PWT Talks NXT takes over the show to talk about NXT. Man, it is so hard not to say takeover. I wonder how many shows that will take. But NXT War Games 2021, we got five matches to talk about, two War Games and three others. Even a Cruiserweight Championship with one non-Cruiserweight in it. So that is what we got. I'm Kelly Wilson. You can find me all over social media at Spooky Milk or at SpookyMilk.games. And I'm here with my brethren, Tom Staupe.
Yes, at Tom Staupe on Twitter. So angry. I don't like seeing new things that I've never seen before. And these are new things that are being showcased on the show tonight. I'm so upset.
And Nate Lindberg.
At Nate Lindberg on Twitter. I do the NXT hits and misses. And I've already got the War Games hits and misses up for you guys on pwtorch.com. So check it out.
Yeah, this show for me mostly hit. What I said in my closing on the write-up is you could watch this show and never know that the TV show is wildly uneven and at times a little embarrassing every now and then. You wouldn't know that there are such problems because tonight was a pretty good show. I mean, Strong and Gacy was, you know, it was a match that happened, but if you folks will remember, early on TakeOver, Sylvester LaFour was getting matches against Marcus Louis in hair versus hair matches, no less. That's a proud tradition of other specials, as the announcers said. They have wrestled on previous NXT specials. They would not say the word TakeOver, even when Johnny wore it proudly on his back porch, saying Johnny TakeOver. If you want to call us, that is 515-605-9345. Cue your question and raise your hand by hitting *1. And every week I think it's just one.
It's just one.
That doesn't seem right, Nate.
It is.
That doesn't. Don't listen.
I'm never wrong.
Don't hit that. Okay. Well, you roped me in with that one, pal. Okay. So let me just run down the card here, and then we'll go to our callers and see what they got. We're going to go to Rev Keith first, and then Darrell, and then we have a caller from probably Phoenix, because I recognize that type of phone number, because I lived there for 5 years. We open with Women's War Games. We've got Cora Jade getting the pin on JC Jane in 31 minutes, 21 seconds. Cora sold a kayfabe injury from fairly early on, and they did a very cool story with the other babyface women protecting her, popping her arm back into place so they didn't lose her, pumping her up, like giving her a lot, trying to build her confidence throughout the match, and then protecting her with kendo sticks every time they could, and Cora ended up actually getting the pin on JC Jane after a bunch of series of spots. I absolutely adored this match. It was the height of the show for me, although there was a lot of good stuff. Kyle O'Reilly and Von Wagner versus Imperium was a little more of that good stuff. Imperium wins as expected in 14:54. It seemed like a mixed bag. Kyle O'Reilly, you know, Von Wagner tries to turn on him, but Kyle gets the better of him. And because he got the better of him, I said, maybe this isn't his last night here, but they are going to be going at it in a cage on Tuesday. And if he loses that, he's either done on the brand in WWE, or he's at least done in NXT. And I just don't know what would happen with him on the main roster. And he did flash the Undisputed Era symbol. If you had Roderick Strong in your pool to be the guy to last the longest from Undisputed Era in this company, then you could probably win a lot of money. Cameron Grimes defeats Duke Hudson in a hair versus hair match. This was 10-24, no frills, but a decent kind of throwback match with the heel just kind of slowing down the pace and Cameron Grimes making it more exciting with his comebacks. Roderick Strong defeated Joe Gacy in a match that mercifully was the shortest on the show, but I wouldn't have been sad if they had cut about three more minutes off of it. 8 minutes, 27 seconds. Roderick Strong retains, which was a surprise to me. I thought they were just going to go a wildly different direction with that championship, but not tonight. And in the main event, Team 2.0 defeats Team Black and Gold. And again, as I said on the recap, I think Lance Storm nailed it before the show where he said they are completely telegraphing this. I mean, by actually branding it 2.0 versus Black and Gold, they essentially announced that Black and Gold has no chance because they're not going to put that era over. I mean, for anybody who's paying any attention at all, there was no surprise there. I thought this match was good to better, but it did not – it really lacked the focal point of the women's War Games match. It's fine that it can be just a bunch of stuff that happened, and it's a bunch of really good stuff that happened. That's cool. There's a lot of good spots, but it didn't have the identity that – like I'll remember how this women's match went a year from now, just like I remember how the women went when Dakota turned on Tegan Knox, and then just two of them had to do it on their own. And I believe it was Rhea Ripley and was it Candice who won that all by their lonesome? Yeah, I remember that, but I don't remember what the men did, even though it was no doubt good. So 38-10 total match time, 1 hour, 43 minutes and 16 seconds on a show that was about 2:48, so a little longer than the more recent takeovers, which was a mild surprise to me. Also, no secret here that this was it for Beth. She is done tonight and will not be on the show anymore. I don't know that she ever figured in to where she was really clicking at a high level, but I liked having her around, and I just loved her as a wrestler. So it was fun to be able to listen to her, even though she was so-so. But that is that. So let us go to 410. I believe this is Reverend Keith. Rev Keith, say hi.
Hi. How are you, gentlemen? Thanks for taking my call.
Yes, absolutely. Thanks for calling us, as always.
Yes, I enjoyed the show. I really did. I was tweeting all night about it. I really felt that these young athletes, especially the 2.0 version, they really brought it. There was a coming out party, especially for Cora Jade and Fabian Aichner and Bron Breakker. He was exceptional in the main event. But I'm like you. I feel that the women's War Games match exceeded expectations. And I have to say, I have seen wrestlers over the years continue with a separated shoulder. Now, we take it as kayfabe, but even if it was real, she could have continued that match because it looked like, if you notice, it looked like her shoulder was swollen. But we'll find out. But either way, they sold it very well, and she hung in there. And I thought it was a good ending, a fitting ending, after all that she endured. What were your thoughts about the match overall?
I don't usually give star ratings to American wrestling just because it's kind of approached differently. Like, it feels perfectly sensible to do it with New Japan, but I don't normally do it with WWE and stuff like that. However, if I did, this is right on the verge because this had a little bit of everything. It exceeds four for me. And for me, that's a big, big surprise. They kept it light there wasn't a lot of Mandy Rose. She, from a character standpoint, that's who would go out last because she would have the others do dirty work for her. That made sense. I thought that it was paced well. I thought the order of people going in was absolutely correct. I was happy Cora came in early just for the slightly longer showcase. Like, little did I know this was her night. She was one that I really worried about when these cuts started to happen because I like her a lot. Like, I like her early on. I liked her to levels that I was with Russ Taylor. Did they call him Tyler Rust or did they call him Russ Taylor? Now I can't remember which is
Tyler
which.
Rust. Tyler
okay,
Rust.
They called him Tyler Rust. I've seen him as Rust Taylor, which is just as difficult with the T's bumping up against each other. He's always got letters bumping up against each other. Yeah, to those levels. Really, really psyched that this was a big night for her, poaching that pin at the end. And I thought that was 100% fitting that it came around to her. I don't know where that goes for her, but sometimes it can just be that it was a big night for her and it elevates her, even if it's not obvious how right away. But she did pin a tag champion. So I don't know if she has no obvious tag partner, but maybe Io does that with her for a while Zoe Stark is still getting back into it, because I believe her injury is fairly severe. I just can't say enough good about this match. I really, really dug it. Favorite match in the night by far. One match that I'll absolutely remember, which is not, at my age, something that I'm doing very often with too many matches, as good as the matches are. So let me throw to you, Tom.
And, of course, you're forgiven in the case of the men's matches, because there were no memorable men's War Games matches until, I mean, sure, there was the thing with Alexander Wolf getting his head stitched, and yeah, Ricochet did some nice flips, but there was no memorable War Games match until Pat McAfee got involved in one for the men. And for the women, they've had a much better track record since they started doing these. And this, I agree, was absolutely excellent. I think, I was looking at it as Toxic Attraction's match, and I've been focusing on Toxic Attraction more as far as the women's division is concerned. And even beyond that, as far as 2.0 wrestlers are concerned, I've been focusing even more on people like jobbers, like Erica Yan and Julissa Leon. So I say all that to say, I've been overlooking Cora Jade, and I don't know if that's something that has been going on in general that NXT wanted to counteract, or if they were just, for whatever reason, just like, okay, this is her star making night, because there were 8 women plus referees involved. And I can't believe I've never noticed this before. I'm sure it was the case in prior matches. I never noticed that the officials don't get in the ring until decisions can be rendered. Just never noticed that before, which I want to say like probably isn't advisable. But then you look at the ringleaders who started the whole thing being Dakota and Kaylee, and it's like, oh, okay, no, they're fine. But yeah, this was 8 women plus referees, and it was all about Cora Jade. They were just like, okay, this is her vehicle. Let's make her a star. And all of the important action focused around her. She was the story of the match. And so we're coming out of it. The match was a success because we're coming out of it. Someone like me is on the other side of it going, all right, I am now thinking of Cora Jade in the echelon of people who should be challenging for the title, which is a complete contrast to how I went into the event with her being the person of the 8 that I was, the competitor of the 8 that I was thinking about the least and overlooking the most. So absolutely a big success there.
Yeah. And she's been somebody I've been watching the most. And outside of Dakota in that division, she's the one that I'm pulling for the most all the time. So, but on a night like this, it was Cora all the way. What I found interesting also is that even though this match was all about her, nobody totally disappeared. Like, there wasn't a lot of Mandy stuff, but nobody totally disappeared. And in the men's, they didn't have that singular storyline, and they still kind of had guys who didn't, like Tony D'Angelo was there. I'm sure he was in the match, but he didn't really figure in much. He was kind of like the Bobby Fish of this year's War Games, where he just kept being there. But you don't know what he did. Nate?
I'm right there with you guys with Women's War Games. I thought it was easily the best match of the night. Corbin is also really wound up right now with his toy, so I apologize for that going on in the background, but that's about as best I can do. I'm super jazzed about the match. A couple things that like really stood out to me was one of the first thing came to mind anyway, Gigi Dolin, and how solidly the crowd was actually behind her. It was like when she came down to the ring, let's go Gigi chants started breaking out. And I think she got like the biggest, she might've got the biggest pop of anybody in the match. I'm, I'm, Probably not, but at least on that side of the cage there on Toxic Attraction's team, I just thought that was kind of interesting because she, even though like a person, I love Gigi Dolin. I think she's certainly the one in Toxic Attraction to watch. She probably isn't the first one that a lot of people would think of when you look at the names in that match. Mandy Rose probably being the one that you'd think would probably get the biggest reaction considering the name and the association with the main roster. But, you know, Gigi Dolin certainly got a major reaction there. I like the way they also wove all the different weapons into the match, how everybody kind of brought something new in. You know, Cora Jade with the skateboard. It's not often you see a skateboard in a wrestling ring. I mean, with Cora Jade you do, but not often you see it used as a weapon. That was cool. And I really thought they pulled off that that injury spot like extremely, extremely well. I really thought she botched a you know, like a senton bomb or something like that, and I was sold that it was a legit injury up until Io Shirai started waving off the medical staff and popped the shoulder back in to replace herself. I'm like, okay, I even put it in the hits and misses. Like, that just answered my question as to whether this was worked or not. So it's not often where there's a worked injury and it looks really, like, really legit. And I'm sitting there questioning it like in the moment. And I feel like a lot of people probably were.
Maybe. The camera stayed on her, which is how I knew immediately it was kayfabe. If with the real injuries, they zoom in on the face of the other person and act like they're getting character stuff when actually they're checking on the injured person. So that's how I knew it was kayfabe right away, because they've really taken to doing that every single time somebody's injured. They zoom in on somebody else. But outside of that, it was incredibly well done.
Well, what kind of sold me on thinking at first that it was legit was actually Io Shirai. She almost went into like mama mode and went over to Cora Jade almost and she had like a genuine look of concern on her face. Like Io Shirai really sold that for me. Not to say that Cora Jade didn't, but it was just that added touch. God damn it, Corbin, come on. Just that added touch from Io Shirai that really kind of put it over the edge for me to make me think that this might be legit. So really just kudos all around. I think the one thing that I thought was a little lackluster, and it's probably just my personal like one nitpick about the match, was the finish. Cora Jade just rolled up JC Jane after JC Jane was laying there for about like 30 seconds after getting powerbombed by Raquel Gonzalez, which, okay, fine. You know, kind of sells Raquel Gonzalez as a, you know, her finisher as something strong and powerful, but how often do you see somebody kick out of a finisher like after lying there for 30 seconds? Almost every single time they're lying there for 30 seconds or so, or a long period of time, they're going to kick out. It just kind of, I was not expecting that to be the finish. And when it was the finish, I was just a little disappointed because I thought there was something else that was going to happen just simply because she was lying there for so long. Other than that though, I really can't complain. I thought it was great. I am looking forward to seeing what Cora Jade does in the future. Similar to Tom, she's actually somebody that I was overlooking, and I don't know why necessarily. I don't know if it's the age, simply because she's so new to the brand or whatnot. But she was a standout for me in that match tonight. And I'm looking at her in a completely different light after this match. So thumbs up for everybody, Cora Jade especially. And man, I don't know if I should have taught Corbin how to speak, because now he seems to be doing it more.
And on top of everything, on top of getting the big spot off the cage, on top of being focal for the injury angle, on top of even getting the finish in the match, she was the one. There's always somebody in the War Games match who does it, but she was the one who kicked out of the champ's finish.
Yeah, that's a good point. She did, didn't she?
Yeah, it was the finish. It didn't bother me. I thought actually, because I've never seen anything quite like it before, just a massive carnage and she's able to finally roll over and get that pin. But it was unconventional. Like, I did have to talk myself into being like, no, that was cool. Yeah, weird audience tonight, par for the course. But yeah, lots of stuff for a lot of Let's Go Gigi. She was very popular here. And I really like Gigi a lot too. I'm pretty meh on Toxic Attraction, but I really like Gigi. And I'm surprised at how much she specifically has caught on. Also, like, I believe they're correct in liking her as much as they do, but I'm surprised at how she has stepped forward, and it's more about her, where it used to be a lot of Toxic Attraction chants, and there still are some, but whatever. So yes, it was cool. And she kind of showed up here too. If there was a person who got a secondary showcase, it was her, although it was a distant second showcase. When Cora came out, there was a brief chant of "You Can't Skate." And I'm just like, yeah, and the Undertaker isn't dead. Like, what is your point? Like somebody's going to go to an Austin Powers movie and stand up and yell, he's not a real international man of mystery.
Wait, he wasn't?
Yeah, that's me using a 1999 movie because I'm old. But yeah, it's like, it never occurred to me to care that she's not out there doing kickflips on her way to the ring, because why would you put yourself in that situation? Whatever.
I'll let that one go because the sequel came out in 99, so you're partially correct. I'll let it go.
At least.
I think the original was 97, but I would have to Google it. I know the sequel was 99.
See, you're over there saying you'll let it go, but you know that I won't let it go for myself. So you know you got me either way.
97, 99, and 2002.
Oh, well, I tried. You know what? That makes sense based on who I went to it with. Oh, outfoxed myself. Keith, if you got one more, go ahead.
Yes, but before I get to my next point, I do want to emphasize that part of the reason why Gigi Dolan, as well as Cora Jade, are so popular down in Florida is because before they came to NXT, Priscilla Kelly and Elena Black were popular on the indie scene. And I know for a fact that at least Priscilla Kelly, if not Elena Black, wrestled for the independent promotions in Florida. I think it's FIPA. And it's another one down there. So that's why they're so popular. But you're right. The fans were really into the former Priscilla Kelly. And it was good to see because she has always been very creative and she tells good stories. And she looked like she's in the best shape of her career thus far. So I was happy to see that. Moving onward with the men, I had no interest in the match between Cameron Grimes and Duke Hudson, although I was wrong on that prediction. I thought that they would have the heel go over and have the feud linger by having Grimes get his head shaved. So I think that was a surprise of the night because a lot of people thought that. But anyway, moving on, as far as the title picture goes, I can see Ciampa versus Bron Breakker 2 coming up in the very near future. I figured that would be the finish. I had predicted that last week with you guys as well as Greg. So we'll have to wait and see when that match comes around. I have to admit, Waller showed me something tonight because I wasn't too high on him, but he showed me a little something in the men's War Games match. So overall, I would rate this show an 8 out of 10. I thought it had enough surprises, enough storytelling, and great ring psychology to give it an 8 out of 10. Let me know your thoughts on my rating. Let me know your thoughts on the men's War Games. Thanks for taking my call. Have a good week.
Keith, if you haven't hung up yet, if I may jump in, can I ask you, again, if you haven't, maybe he hung up.
I'm still here.
But may
still
I ask you, okay. May I ask you to delve a little deeper into what you saw in Waller tonight, what specifically jumped out to you?
Well, I like his sense of storytelling. I like the fact that he sells well. He showed me more in-ring skill that I probably gave him credit for. I know he's very young, but at the same token, I think he, along with Cora, have a lot in them, a lot of promise, a lot of ring skill that NXT is really looking for at this time with the 2.0 version. I think that those two represent, along with Carmelo Hayes, he's on another level right now, but those two specifically, since I'm focusing on them right now, I think those two represent the new era in NXT, along with Carmelo Hayes. They show a lot, and I think that's what 2.0 is all about. I think those are two of the few examples that the promotion is building around the young talent, you know, because we know Cora is 20. He, I don't know his age, but you can look at him and see he's very young. I know Carmelo Hayes is very young. D'Angelo, he's okay, but I think he's somewhat overrated. But I like Grayson Waller, and I expect to see them use him in a more prominent role in the weeks to come.
Excellent. Thank you.
Thanks, as always, to you, Keith. And by the way, I watched the switchboard. He never hangs up. He listens all the way. he's always there for the whole show. So, yeah, I'm with him on those reasons to like what little Waller has been. Like, he's not getting a lot of minutes yet, but I really kind of dig him as a bump taker. There's a lot of work to be done in some ways, which is the point. But I actually really dig him as a bump taker as well. And for me, he is somebody who stepped forward a little bit in this match tonight as well. And I expected him to. I really did. I thought that he would be pretty decent. And maybe it's just because I'm looking closer, because I am the one recapping these and talking about his moveset and what he's doing week to week. But I wasn't surprised that he's one of the ones who stepped forward. I also wasn't surprised that Tony D'Angelo in this kind of match is out of his depth. It's not a match that really lends well to him. I mean, you kind of need some background guys, but when I'm trying to think of what he did tonight, it's mostly just breaking up pins. And so he, like Waller, has a lot of work to do. It's just in different areas. The men's War Games match, as I said, was mostly just a lot of stuff that happened in 38-10. The 2.0 guys go over as expected. Breaker kicks out of a couple of big spots. He did also once have to be saved by a breakup of a pin from Carmelo Hayes. Hayes didn't super show off his skill set in this match, but he still brought his personality to the forefront, I think, more than anybody else. And, oh, gosh, heaven pray. I am so happy that he acted like a heel, that, you know, heel heat isn't dead. He's out there doing underhanded things. Yes, it's all legal, but he's throwing low blows out there and laughing about it. And the announcers, bless them, are talking about how that's uncool, rather than Michael Cole saying, well, you got to try to win. And I'm like, cool, the Heat's dead. Wrestling's dead. That's awesome. I liked a lot of spots in this match. And it didn't totally coalesce, but it was harmed so much by how obvious it all was. Because I think everybody would have said 2.0 will win this match. Everybody who's really paying attention and thinks like a booker. And I also think they would have, if they had guessed, if they had put any thought into guessing, this is the pin combination that is by far the most obvious. Nate, if your pet orangutan has quieted down a bit, go ahead.
He has. So, I definitely like men's War Games. I agree with you. I didn't think it was nearly as good as women's War Games. Women's War Games, like you said, kind of had more of a story to it, a little bit more kind of a cohesive flow, whereas men's war games, just a lot of stuff going on, a lot happening. Team 2.0 was, I mean, like you said at the top of the show, they kind of telegraphed the Team 2.0 winning by calling it Team 2.0. We talked about it on Tuesday on PWT Talks NXT is, you know, there's no way Team 2.0 is going to lose. Like, why would you promote this new brand with this new talent and then have them lose to, you know, the old school, the old talent, and kind of the talent that's the black and, you know, Team Black and Gold that represents everything that you're trying to get away from. And at the same time, it's also really kind of interesting that they even went that way in the first place. They're presenting Team Black and Gold as the faces, or at least it's what it seemed like. And I mean, Team Black and Gold, that's the crowd themselves, you know, the crowd, myself, everybody that, you know, pretty much behind Team Black and Gold. Largely, everybody looks at NXT 2.0 from outside the company as not as good as Black and Gold. You know, there are, you know, exceptions to the rule and things like that, but there are exceptions to that, but not a rule. God, come on, Corbin. It's just kind of strange that they're trying to portray Black and Gold as the faces in this in the first place, because it's kind of like kind of directly against what they were doing with 2.0. But at the same time, I think they pulled it off well. They were able to get kind of the 2.0 guys over a little bit more. Tom, I agree with you. Tommy D'Angelo did kind of stick out like a sore thumb for me in this. Even when they announced the two Team 2.0 members, he kind of seemed like he was a little out of place. I did, however, like the fact that he used the chain to lock the door. I thought that was kind of unique, kind of interesting. We've seen stuff like that before in cage matches and things like that. But I thought it was cool. It was kind of funny that Bron Breakker was then not able to then break the chain.
That's what I was going to say, man. It's cool, but it literally always goes wrong.
It always goes wrong. You know, Mark Henry trying to break the chain, that didn't go over very well.
There was one with Killian Dane, where there was a spot with the door and they had to move away from that because he wasn't able to do what he had to do. And you know, they're just dying inside of anxiety. And it's like, get the camera off of them. And with Breakker, they actually did it. Like, they learned from the Killian Dane spot, even though he apparently must have been able to do it afterwards, or they just did it in another way away from our eyes.
Exactly. So it was kind of funny in just simply the fact that Bron Breakker couldn't Breakker the chain, I just was kind of laughing a little bit inside. Overall, I thought it was good. Seeing the visual of Bron Breakker pinning NXT champion Tommaso Ciampa, we kind of know that match is coming anyway. I still think personally it's too early to have him win the NXT championship. The term hotshot gets thrown around quite a bit. But I kind of feel like even if he was to win this 3 months down the road, I still feel like that's kind of hot-shotting for this guy. He's still really new to the brand. He's still really new. He's still new in the ring. He's got everything to be a star. But I just kind of feel like it's not time yet for him. But that said, you look at other people, you look at somebody like Brock Lesnar, and I mean, I'm not necessarily trying to compare him to Brock Lesnar, but I mean, Lesnar, he had a meteoric rise and he was champ within less than a year. So, I mean, it's not unheard of. But I just kind of wonder how it's going to pan out, how it's going to work if he does indeed win that championship. With them trying to get away from Black and Gold, Tommaso Ciampa is the face of Black and Gold. I mean, him, Gargano, especially the two of them, for the people that remain in the company, potentially remain in the company in one of their cases, they're the people that I think of the most when it comes to NXT, you know, Black and Gold at this point. And for Ciampa to keep holding the title much longer, I feel like it's just kind of like holding on to that black and gold mentality a little bit, probably longer than they want, and they'd want to. So it's like, I feel like it needs to transition to a 2.0 competitor at some point. I don't know. I feel like Bron Breakker, it's still a little too early for.
Tom. See, I think roughly 3.5 months, 4 months if you don't go by our evolution, but you instead go by when his video packages started airing for Tommaso Ciampa. Where's my head? Kevin Owens to win the championship. Obviously different situation with Owens instantly being like, oh, this guy's amazing, and Breakker needing to prove himself a little bit more, but not unprecedented. So let's see, minor observations. I won't tell a lie. Gargano coming out to Rebel Heart was very nice. I also feel like LA Knight is just being totally wasted in these spots, because he's so good. You know, he's perfectly fine glue in a match like this. He does everything that you would need from a wrestler like him when he's in singles feuds. And if anybody saw the pre-show, that promo that he cut in the locker room was incredible. And it's just like, the dude's 39. Get him up on Raw or SmackDown. What's going on? So that's there. Yeah, I am a little worried that that the match will mostly be remembered for Bron Breakker not being able to operate the bolt cutter. Anyone who's I know it always goes wrong on these shows because it's live TV, but anybody who's used a bolt cutter to break chain link before, I'll let you imagine the scenario that I had to do that in, but it's not as hard as he made it look, and my muscles are not as big as his are. So I don't know. I'm just worried that that's biggest takeaway here. And I know, Kelly, you mentioned this before, but I feel the story of the match was really that the 2.0 guys more or less disappeared, not just Tony D'Angelo, yes, him more than anyone else, but the 2.0 guys mostly disappeared behind the nostalgia spots for the black and gold guys. It was such a showcase. Well, I don't want to use the term showcase here because the story of the special in general was that it was a showcase for the 2.0 acts. But this was so much of a nostalgia show, this match was, for the black and gold, that it wasn't until the latter stages of the match that they started to compensate for that, where Waller hit the elbow through the table off the top. D'Angelo did the crowbar spot on Pete Dunne. Carmelo yanked Tom Caster away from, you know, the DIY reunion and then hit the low blow. And Bron Breakker, as you know, as we predicted, pinned Ciampa with a beautiful finishing sequence. So every single one of the 2.0 guys got their spots in the end. But getting there, they felt widely anonymous. So I think that was an issue.
Yes, indeed. I'm definitely not still thinking about the issues where you had to use bolt cutters. Definitely not thinking about that at all. Bron, the key is somebody's got to hold that thing taut. If that happens, it's 1,000 times easier. And it seemed like nobody was doing him a solid and doing that. And we know that the Steiners are a really intelligent bunch. So it's like, how did you... it's so fitting. It's so fitting. Okay, so thank you so much, Keith. Let us go to our very good friend, Darrell. If I can unmute him, my computer's being odd. I think it's happened now. Darrell, if you are there, say hey.
How y'all doing tonight, Joe?
Oh, I'm having a great night. How are you?
All right. Having a decent night. Starting back, getting ready for the work week to start back.
Yeah, this was my day off as well, so I spent it all doing this. Yeah.
I spent my last 2 days first following college football and then, you know, Sunday football, so.
Yep, I follow the Vikings, so so that happened. So let's never talk about that.
Y'all messed up my sheet. That's what y'all did. Y'all messed up my sheet.
That's what we do, man. Oh, please,
stealing,
go to wrestling.
Stealing a loss out of jaws of victory.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, we do that, man.
But, yeah, I'm listening to you guys tonight. I want to start off by talking about a match that really, out of all the five, caught my eye. And it was better than what I would thought, but just didn't understand the ending. The tag team match. I felt like Imperium got over in that match a whole lot, even though I feel like they need to take all these people out of the Performance Center and start doing shows other places, but that's another thing. But outside of that match, how everybody performed in that match was very good. It was a match that had everybody standing on their feet, even though you had one guy out of the three who is dull and as boring can be. But that's one other thing. But having that boring guy trying to turn and don't succeed, hopefully, please, in this cage match that they're talking about on Tuesday, he don't win, but it looks like he probably is. But outside of that, that was good, and Fabian was the star of that match right there with everything that he performed and put on. What did you guys think?
This match was awesome. There was a time at TakeOver where I just stopped thinking that anything besides the tag team championship match was going to be the show stealer and the best match of the show, because it kept happening over and over and over, and it didn't matter who was in it. I mean, like, one of my favorite tag matches ever had the Vaudevillains in it, and like, no disrespect, but like, that match shouldn't be on that level, even though I like both guys. It was like you could set your watch to the TakeOver tag team championship match every single time. It could have main evented. And the only time it's ever main evented was when DIY split up. That's the only time. So, yeah, I really dug this. And coming in, it didn't really have a lot of heat because it was just kind of a last minute. There was a match to determine the top contenders. We thought it might have been a triple threat, but that would have muddied the waters and not left maybe enough space for this post-match angle to breathe. That makes sense. A lot of people think that this ending makes it obvious that Kyle is completely leaving the company. But if anything, the fact that he went Undisputed Era, that would be a big, big no-no. And if anything, the fact that he did that and he still got a match that they're promoting for Tuesday makes me think like it's a red herring. It really does. I think there's a very good chance he's sticking around. He'll lose this match almost absolutely. But I think there's a decent chance Kyle's staying around. I won't be surprised either way. Let me say it that way. But I've kind of talked myself into thinking I'm slightly more on the side of he's going to stick around. Yes, not surprised that this match was good. Surprised that this match was awesome. For me, Eichner's a guy who's been out there as somebody who's just consistently so impressive in what he can do. But you put him in a match that's not throwaway, as so many of these Imperium matches are, obviously more people notice. And he really did bust out some new things. He's got everything Vince wants but height. And Vince loves hair, too, which is, you know, going against Fabian, but he really, really loves height. That will always work against him. But if he's in this team with Bartel, who does have the height and can talk, that will help him out a lot. I wish Eichner was more of a talker, but he's just kind of he gets in his time, but he doesn't talk like Bartel. He's not even in the same stratosphere of Bartel, who's not like an elite guy, but Bartel is pretty good on the stick. This was booked in this spot essentially as a come down match from the women, and it absolutely was not. Like the crowd was gassed at the beginning, and they booed Von Wagner, as they will do. I thought he was perfectly cromulent in his appearance as a, like, he's slower with his offense, but I don't think there's anything particularly terrible about his offense. I think they can get out of him something useful, even though I don't think he'll ever be particularly up the card. I think that he's like a best case scenario Snitsky sort of guy, which sounds so mean, but I think that can be useful for a while. A lot of good things to say about this match. Tom, you say some of them.
All righty. Yes. Ever since I started being aware of Bartel, he has always exercised good crowd psychology. So the red herring for me tonight, and I'm ready to be wrong on both accounts with both O'Reilly and Johnny Gargano, but I'm wondering if the red herring isn't Johnny Gargano. I'm half expecting on Tuesday night for him to come out and cut a salmon jacket promo and, you know, make us believe for a while and then hit us with, I'm not going anywhere, NXT for life. Whereas with O'Reilly, I'm not trying to be dramatic here, but when he threw up the Undisputed Era symbol, that felt to me as close as we've gotten to Brett writing WCW in the air ever since Tony Khan decided to start smashing a bunch of living white male action figures together with his early inheritance. The theme continues. It's a Von Wagner showcase. And I think that's a good thing. You've got very reliable acts who have been on the brand for longer than the brand was designed to sustain people. And these reliable acts are in some cases carrying, in other cases, not having to pull as much weight to showcase these people. And I think for the most part, everybody lived up to those spots tonight. Von Wagner being toward the top. I think I might put him up there. Obviously tonight, Cora Jade is in a whole different, you said stratosphere, so I'm trying to think of something else. But yeah, anyway, Cora Jade is the one that's like the big story of the night. But Von Wagner is right up there on the next level down as far as showcases. And there's nothing wrong with having a slower speed, especially for a bigger guy. I wish more bigger guys were more comfortable working slower instead of always having to be Bam Bam Bigelow. Of course, I say that still seeing that, like, you know, I don't think it's ever going to change. Von Wagner, when he needs to take one step, when he needs to take one big step, he instead takes five little ones. So still awkward, but whatever. I thought that he very much held up his end of the match. And a match that I was not expecting much from at all, not just storyline-wise, as we covered on the Daily Cast, but I mean, it's just sort of, okay, just get in and out. You know, this is probably a stepping stone toward Walter showing up at some point. I didn't think we'd see him tonight. And we didn't, for anybody who is listening but didn't watch, I guess. I ended up being really, really impressed with this. And yeah, it did recall the heyday of takeover tag matches, but I might view this more favorably just because those got to such a comical place with just so many kickouts where most of them had me rolling my eyes. And for as good as the work rate was, it just got so formulaic. And there was this whole era of NXT where it was just like, okay, let's just put all those same guys out there in different combinations and just have work rate matches, which still exists to an extent, but I digress. I just thought that, when Kyle started getting believable near falls, I mean, I was so confident going in that Imperium was going to retain. And for like the last third of the match, they really had me wondering with those really, really good, but not overdone near falls.
Nate?
So it's funny because I was on the opposite end of the spectrum. I was thinking that Imperium was actually going to lose to Von Wagner and Kyle O'Reilly here. Then Von Wagner and Kyle O'Reilly have, you know, a halfway decent tag run, which eventually leads to their breakup. And Imperium losing the tag team titles was going to lead to Walter showing up and kind of like, hey, Imperium, like, you guys suck now. Come on, let's not suck anymore. In, you know, better terms than that, I'm just getting tired and I can't think of a better way to say it. So there we go. But that was kind of where I was thinking that this was going to go. This match was the one match. Well, actually, yeah, believe it or not, it was the one match on the show I was really not looking forward to. I was looking forward to the Cruiserweight title match more than I was this match, simply to find out what was going to happen to the Cruiserweight title. But this match really took me by surprise. It hooked me. Von Wagner especially took me by surprise here. You know, I've been joking, you know, creator wrestler. I've called him a creator wrestler, you know, 1,000 times at this point. And he stood out to me in this match tonight. He felt like he had some more fire behind him. He seemed like he was in his element. Like, one of the things that I thought about tonight, when he was kind of standing in the corner, a lot of times he's got like this blank look in his face. He's looking around the arena like, I've never been here before, or like, where am I right now? You know? And tonight he didn't seem like, for lack of a better term, I'm going to call that anxiety. It didn't seem like that anxiety was there. He just kind of seemed like he was in his element. And he was believable for me for the first time tonight. Even on the turn on Kyle O'Reilly, which after they lost, I kind of saw coming, especially where they were standing in the ring together for quite some time. That was telegraphing it for me easily. I was just waiting for Von Wagner to take him out. But I thought you know, they actually performed this match really, really well. I'm kind of in the same boat as Tom here on like the Gargano and Kyle O'Reilly thing, whether or not they're staying or going, because like they put so much emphasis on Gargano leaving tonight. You know, Tommaso Ciampa did a really heartfelt post about Gargano on social media earlier in the day. You're saying like, this is the last time we share a ring, you know, it was an honor, something like that. It had a whole bunch of pictures of the two of them throughout the years in NXT. They mentioned it quite a few times on the show tonight. So I feel like they wouldn't be announcing that. They wouldn't be talking about that if Gargano was going to be leaving. Whereas Kyle O'Reilly, they didn't mention it. The crowd started chanting, thank you, Kyle. That was probably the closest that they actually got to mentioning it on the show. And obviously that's not legit mentioning it. And then, you know, they announced that this tag, the cage match and all that. So I kind of feel like Kyle, and then he also threw up the Undisputed Era sign, which, you know, Bobby Fish and Adam Cole have been kind of buddying up in AEW. Like, it'd be interesting to see an Undisputed reunion again over there. I think that'd be kind of cool. So I feel like that might be telegraphing it a little bit for Kyle. Whereas Gargano, where they were kind of bringing it up, they were talking about it. Like, I feel like that kind of means he might be sticking around for a while. I feel like he is one of those NXT guys. Although I wouldn't blame him if he wanted to go out and do something else and whatever. But by the same token, I feel like with the baby, you know, and all of that, wouldn't he rather stay in Florida and have that NXT schedule? He's not going to be traveling, you know, if he was to go to AEW. I'm just assuming that would be where we went. But wherever he goes, wherever he went other than NXT, he'd be traveling. He'd be, you know, he wouldn't be around. I figure kind of now, especially with Candace pregnant, baby coming, you'd probably want to stick around, you know, home. So I feel like I don't see him going anywhere. I hope he doesn't go anywhere. I want to see him in NXT, but again, I wouldn't be super, super surprised either if, you know, he did leave. This tag match though, you know, getting back to that, was really the was a shock of the night for me. I wouldn't say it was the match of the night, but this was the match I was not looking forward to, and it really not only turned me around on the match itself, but on Von Wagner. I've been kind of like, I haven't been super high on him. I've wanted to be, like, I see the potential there, but he hadn't got me yet. Tonight was the first time I actually saw and kind of felt that superstar quality in him. And I hope we see more out of that. We see that kind of grow and develop, and he can become, you know, a pretty decent heel in NXT and beyond.
I can see it now, the Undisputed Era. Last one to break their necks doing a useless joke spot on weekly TV loses.
You know, they're not doing that much anymore. but yes, they've passed through that kind of thing. That is absolutely true. Okay. Darrell, go for one more.
All right. Yeah. So we're tonight. One of my biggest takeaway outside of that tag team match probably being the second best match on the card outside of the women's war games, which what made the women's war games so good is because of the story that they told with Corey Jade. And you only can get that when you mix the teams like how they did. That's why I said I did not like the men's war game, because they made it 2.0 versus Black and Gold, and you had people acting. You had some people on the team in 2.0 acting like heels when you had heels on the Black and Gold, and they wouldn't even act like a heel, a la Eli Drake, L.A. Knight. But that will ruin that match for me. And my biggest take again from this whole thing is I think it's time for them to start thinking about getting this show up out of the performance center, because I feel like we look at people and think more about their potential because they're in the same place and you're getting the same fans that giving a lot of responses that I don't think some of these people would get if they would go to other cities, other places, which you get other feels and other takes and how other people look at them. And that will start making people look at them different. And I think that was the total what made this show not so good for me, is because that I'm getting tired of seeing shows in the performance center and seeing that performance center crowd respond and do the wacky, zany stuff that they do there and their quirks and stuff with people who they like and who they don't like and things like that. And it doesn't make the show good. And I feel like they could do better if they could go out. And I think that's the one thing that caused this, why this show doesn't catch on or haven't seen anywhere different, is because they've been stuck in this performance center for going on two years now, or maybe even more, or it could be less, but it feels even longer. It feels like they've been there for 10 years, and that's the biggest take. That's why if I would give a grade to this show, it was a 6 out of 10, it was just above average. But what do you guys think about that?
Thank you, Darrell. As always, Tom.
Honestly, not too much more to add beyond what I already said. I think in this specific regard, it's tough to argue. I mean, I have no idea what their plans or lack thereof are regarding a continuation of the full sale relationship, but that obviously does not change the issues that Darrell is talking about. So it's hard for me to argue whether it's Full Sail or whether it's the Performance Center that they move on from that, even though we were, or at least I was, urging it at one point. Like, this is when I was still going to the tapings, and, you know, my in with the torch was writing these taping reports, and that's the whole reason I'm on this podcast, and I enjoyed going to them. And even I was looking at the brand and just going objectively, like, yeah, I'm enjoying this, but this brand needs to start going on the road and selling tickets. I do not think they are at that place anymore. I don't think they could draw in impressive arenas, and I think it would counteract. You know, this is back when the brand was still growing in that quote accidental way that we always, or that I always bring up that Triple H would talk about. But now that they are making the hard turn back toward being developmental. I think it, you know, that would run counter to the objective. But I do see what Darrell is saying, and I thought of it briefly tonight when Alicia Taylor said War Games, because I remember the first War Games in, what was it, 2018? Well, whenever, the first War Games for NXT, I remember Alicia Taylor was still new, and I remember the moment where I was like, ooh, okay, she's good, was when she announced, when she said War Games for the first War Games match, and she just, for those few seconds, she owned that big arena that they were in. And tonight, the tone was different, and the tone was that of somebody who is in a smaller room and just speaking to the same people that show up every single week and have all their little in-joke chants and everything. So yes, the issues are there, although I can't find it in me to fight too hard for a change in that regard.
Yeah, it's a problem with no solution. I feel the same. Darrell is one of actually many. I saw a bunch of people on Twitter saying the same thing, where they think this show needs to go on the road, and they've never been less ready to go on the road. I've never been so sure that they weren't going on the road. If they didn't go on the road when they were drawing, they're not going to go on the road now. Because they're drawing a small – oh, by the way, I don't know if you guys saw – the photos or anything like that from NWA Hard Times 2, the size of that crowd.
Oh yeah. And they tried to say, we're being safe because of the pandemic when everybody is lumped together in the same part of the bleachers.
But then they mashed them all. Yep.
Yeah. Oh dear.
Yeah. Oh, that was really hard to look at because that was fun to cover for a while. Like literally fun, really fun to cover, but almost everybody, a bunch of the really good ones left. And then one of the really fun ones died, like just awful, awful fortune for them. The one guy playing two characters, actually.
Yeah, Josephus. Yeah. You know, I only paid attention to it peripherally, but when I did pay attention to it, he was one of the main standouts.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he was a good, goofy dude. And, oh, man, I had that podcast on the Torch for a while, and one of the guys, Mike Taylor, said something like, get Josephus out there in a match with question mark or something. And I was like, dude, they're not about to be in the same match. He was like, oh, my God, are you serious? Oh, yeah.
We talked about it on our daily cast where I was like, okay, I know I'm not watching the product, but I'm still pretty sure that's Josephus, right, Kelly? And you were like, yeah.
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 Of course. Yeah, they're this version of NXT is not going to tour. It would be valuable to them, but all that value is undone if like 100 super hardcore wrestling fans who go to everything are all you get at the show. Nate?
100, I couldn't agree with you guys more, 100%. And not only what you guys are saying, but think of it from like a company perspective, think like a business perspective. NXT, from what I've heard over the years, has always operated at a loss. If they've operated at a loss when they were at the height of their popularity, they're still operating at a loss now. They got to be. So why take that on the road when you know they got to know they're not going to draw? They're not going to be able to fill, you know, even probably 2,500 seats at this point with what they've got. They're not ready for it. Maybe something like the Coconut Loop or something like that, untelevised shows, but I can't see them going on the road. I can't see them like, you know, doing the house shows that they were even doing, you know, back in 2016. You know, I saw a couple 2016, 2017. I saw a couple house shows up here in the Lowell, Massachusetts area. So, you know, I can't see them even doing something like that. Not just because of COVID and stuff, but just the talent isn't, it's not ready. The talent's just not ready. The product is not ready and it's not there. If they were to tour weekly, it's now a third brand again. And they need to build it to become a third brand again because they, you know, they need to put the butts in the seats. It's not there, and it defeats, like, I think, I forget which one of you guys said it, but it essentially defeats the purpose of what they're trying to do right now. Go back to that developmental brand. They need to be close to the performance center, close to whatever facility they're actually using to work out in and train in right now. I think Tom said it was a warehouse or something like that nearby. But they need to be close to that and kind of develop these talents. It's not ready to go on the road. If you were to take the black and gold brand, even the black and gold brand from, September was the last time we saw the black and gold brand. Even if you were to take that, I could see them maybe succeeding on a weekly, road trip type of a deal. But where the product is now and the direction that they're looking to go for and go with, I don't see it happening at all.
Yeah, and the idea with this brand is that it's never going to be a group that's ready to go on the road. Like, individuals will be ready, right, and they'll do some house shows. Like, they've been doing the Roy Wilkins Auditorium in St. Paul. I've seen them there several times. Four times? Yeah, I think I've seen them four times. Every time they've come up in the last 5 to 7 years. But it's not like I've seen a lot of not ready for TV talents there. And I've seen some matches that I can't believe how bad they were. And then on top of that, I can't believe how long they went. But that is what it is for. We are going to, I believe, Phoenix. So 623, I don't know who you are. Say who you are and where you're calling from.
Hey, Kelly. Hey, Tom. Hey, Nate. This is Brian from Phoenix, 30-year senior PW Tours VIP subscriber. How are you gentlemen doing?
I was going to say, Kelly, how did you not know it was Brian?
I wanted it to be Brian, but I didn't know if he doesn't call all that often. That is awesome. Brian, you got a made-for-radio voice. I love it.
Well, I've said that so many times, it just kind of flows pretty easy.
All right. I suppose. Yeah, I get my aloha and my opening out of the way so many times that it does come naturally at this point. How did you find the show?
Well, first of all, your aloha does sound like you're a native, so I'll let you know since you practice this so much. I hope you gentlemen have a really good night, first of all. And I'm not going to keep you very long because it's 10:13 here in Phoenix, so I know it's 12 o'clock or 12:13 East Coast time. Also, I will say that congratulations to my Detroit, because I'm an original Detroiter. Congratulations to my Detroit Lions, finally get their first win of the season.
I am happy for them, even if it means I am deeply sad.
Kelly, I cannot live through another 0-16 season in my lifetime. So,
I feel that. That would be horrifying.
So let's talk about wrestling. Now, again, I'm not going to keep you three gentlemen, not very long. I overall enjoyed the card, and I thought all the matches were either decent to good. Where I'm going to go with this is that I'm not going to take very long. I'm going to wish Beth Phoenix good luck, because I remember when she first started, I asked Tom a question about, because Tom, he originally said, he was kind of not sure about her announcing. And, and people have to grow into a role, so maybe I say us wrestling fans can maybe be hard in the beginning, but she kind of settled in really well into what she was doing. And can I say I miss her? Yeah, she did bring a lot as a good announcer babyface to it. So Beth Phoenix is that. I didn't like mention maybe a little bit about what all of you are saying, a little bit about what Darrell was saying as well. This NXT universe was a little – I mean, they are what they are, and Tom was a member of it. They are what they are. I'm not a like you always say, Kelly, you're old guy. I'm 54 years old right now until I'm 55, right? I'm 54. And I still don't like the holy S word because, I still think that kids are watching this. And to me, S is still a bad word until something weird happens and it's not a bad – well, it's kind of not a bad word anymore, but to me it is still a bad word. And for it being so audible, even though it's on pay-per-view – and it's audible on normal TV, but it's cable TV too. So I think the NXT universe was a little out of control. Tom, I feel the same way as you feel about Mr. Tony Khan and his, father's checkbook. It is what it is, and we'll ultimately see how this all plays itself out because I'm a business major. by trade. What I do now is not necessarily business, but I do have an MBA. And I will say that business is business. And Kelly, with you being a business owner, you know, WWE makes a lot of money, but also they are they're beholden to stockholders as well too. And you know, do you pay Kelly? Do you know you have your collectible shop? You don't hire people or have people there as far as being charity is concerned. If you know, and you're there to make enough to support yourself and your family, you're not going to be holding on to people if the bills aren't cutting it. So while I agree with, I don't like how, a lot of these releases shock me all the time and why they get rid of this person and when did they get rid of this person. But again, WWE is a corporate entity who are beholden to stockholders. Until they become private, like AEW is, then they can, make other decisions as far as how they do their payroll. Something else, a couple other things that necessarily weren't a part of tonight. Tiffany Stratton. Tom, you mentioned her a little bit earlier, and I'm not exactly sure who she is, to be honest, but I want to get excited about it. But then I was excited about Frankie Monet when her vignette started, and where we are with Frankie Monet now. So we'll have to see how that all works out with Tiffany Stratton. Johnny Gargano, you were just talking about him a few minutes ago. I don't listen to a whole ton of or read a whole lot of wrestling Twitter or anything like that, or a whole bunch of other podcasts besides yours podcast. But could he just be leaving for a paternity leave and not necessarily leaving the company? I don't know. Maybe somebody did say yes, they read his contract. Lastly, speaking about reading contracts, I think it's kind of speculative at most, where I hear a lot of people on Twitter and maybe also on podcasts saying about, well, USA must not like how NXT has turned out, or NXT 2.0, and this is not what they bought. I would say that that I'm pretty sure in the contract that WWE signed with USA, the USA has an out not anytime they want to, but at least have an out saying, well, we no longer want to carry this on USA. Maybe we'll move it to Peacock. So I'm pretty sure WWE talks to USA and tell them what they're doing. So for everybody to say, well, this isn't what USA bought, who knows what WWE told them what the plans are as far as shifting to NXT 2.0. Speaking of NXT 2.0, and I'm going to send yourselves an email for the regular podcast about, actually, I think right now what we're experiencing now is actually NXT 4.0. And I'll elaborate that on the normal podcast. And the only other thing I have left is that, of course, I'm a 30-year VIP subscriber, senior VIP subscriber, I should say. And so I always will say, listen to NXT 8 years back with Tom and Kelly. And Nate, always good talking to you too. And hopefully everybody has a really good night. And I will talk to you later. Thanks a lot.
Hey, Brian, if you're still listening, I just picked up the host line here. For some reason, we lost our call.
I am still here, Nate.
Okay. We'll finish the rest of the show off of Blog Talk, because Blog Talk kicked us off.
Nice. Okay. I said a lot of things there, Nate, and not necessarily any questions, but I will say I'm glad that Joe Gacy didn't win, because I do not watch 205 Live. If I think I have more time in my life, I would actually like to watch it, to see what's going on with it. I am a pure WWE guy. I don't watch any AEW or anything else, but it's just the way my time is budgeted out. But I am glad that a 205 wrestler still has their title, and not like, okay, we're going to do we won't pay attention to the weight right now, because that kind of similarly, and I like TNA back in the day, but when Samoa Joe won the X Division title, I know that originally the X Division was said that, it was no limits, not having anything to do with weight necessarily. Actually, that's what they said, it had nothing to do with weight. But when Joe won the X Division title, to me that was kind of like, okay. And then when Abyss won it, when he won the X Division title, I was like, well, to me it was still in my mind a cruiserweight title. So that's what I have about the Joe Gacy Roderick Strong match, and I still like the Diamond Mind, but I want to see what they do next.
Absolutely, absolutely. So what I will do is because Tom Kelly cannot actually hear this right now. This is actually going over my cell phone. So I will bring this up to him, and we'll have it on the final recording of Wrestling Night in America that will be coming out tomorrow.
Nate, I hope you and Corbin, I still believe that you named Corbin after wrestler King Corbin or Happy Corbin. I'll still believe that until it's not proven correct, so I'll just let you know that.
Corbin Dallas Multipass from The Fifth Element, where it's from.
If you want to keep telling us that, you know, Nate, that's fine, but we all know the truth, okay? We all know the
truth.
All
right, sounds good to me, man.
Again, Nate, it's always good talking to you. Hopefully you have a great night. Thanks a lot.
All right, take care. And anybody else listening, if you are still there, unfortunately, like I said, we did drop off from Blog Talk. Tom and Kelly cannot hear what I am saying right now. Ooh, Tom and Kelly can't hear what I'm saying right now. How about that? So we are going to finish up the show on Skype. The three of us will finish up the recording, and we'll mash it all together and put it out on the Daily Cast. So we will see you there. Bye now.
Nate, could I say one last thing?